This is the class? Okay. Maybe while we're waiting about 2 or 3 minutes for a few others to come in. I know you've done this at least 3 or 4 times already. But if we can introduce ourselves just very briefly, what temple you're from, your name, and maybe in one sentence you can mention why you've taken this class. Perhaps you just have this hour free, or you want to know why someone would even give a class like this. But if we can start from here, just introduce yourself real quick.
My name is Jyoti Das. Okay. I belong to this temple, Bangladesh. I've been involved in this call for 15 years. And prior to my involvement in spiritual life, I went through this kind of problem, depression. So I feel very concerned.
Okay, good. Can you hear him in the back?
No.
My name is Robert Shiva Das.
I'm from Poland.
There's a microphone. You have to speak loud. Speak loud.
Yeah. I'm from Poland, and living in a temple is always a dangerous for the skin, for the psyche, emotions, and so on. Because only special people can do it for a long time. So we should help others as well to survive.
Good. I don't know if it's going to take it to do this, so we'll just leave real quick. Introduce yourself very briefly and why you're taking this course. If there is a particular reason, yes.
I'm Batayer from Antwerp, and only 2 years in ISKCON, and just very useful also in Grihastha life.
I'm Batayer from Vienna. Now we live 50 kilometers away from Vienna. I am now 14 and from my birth on an ISKCON. And why I take this course is, first of all, I want to see how it is, and then also I want to I want to learn how you can solve problems in Krishna consciousness.
My name is Teresa Alcetania, and I take this course, so I just came to sit here now. Because I see that some devotees face that problem, and probably myself also to some extent at some moments in my Krishna consciousness. That's why I'm interested.
Okay. Does anyone have this first sheet we passed out today? It's finished? Can you get some more copies, maybe 15. You have a few more copies? Yeah, we need about 20 more. Maybe 25. Okay.
Max, Amsterdam. I want to ask for black in Amsterdam. We've got depressed people, so I'd like to know the right way to help them.
My name is Hans Avatar Das. I live in Bangladesh for...
Can you hear me in the back? I don't think you can hear. Yes.
And I was always interested in psychology and the workings of the mind, so for that reason I...
Okay, psychology workings of the mind.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ramachandra Das from Italy, and I'm interested in understanding
and how to get out from it. Okay. So many people interested personally or temple-wise, etc. Please.
My name is Sajana Shaidas. Actually, I think of some situation in the temple that help improve the situation.
Okay. We'll just take a few more, just getting 1 or 2 minutes of more people to come in. We're just asking why you're taking the course, and if you can introduce yourself real briefly. This one? So I don't really have an amplifier mic. I just have to talk loud. Okay, I'll have to shout. I think we'll just take three or four more if the room is already filling up. Yourself, Ramon?
I'm Padranga Das, serving Radhish, and I'm also interested to know how to solve this problem in Krishna consciousness.
Okay, this is a few mothers on this side. Are you taking this course? Who are you asking?
My name is
Padma Gauri,
and I'm taking this course to learn your perspective on depression.
Okay.
Taking the course to help people.
I tell you, because she's trying to see what kind of craziness I'm about. Okay. Okay, she's taking it because she was in one of my earlier seminars and is curious to see what we're going to discuss here. Maybe if I stand here, it may help a little voice. So I'll just speak loud, okay? In a few minutes, the rest of you who didn't get the sheet will have the sheet, okay? So we're going to do 1.5 days just on this sheet. We'll give you some more things later. Let me just briefly kind of tell you what we're going to talk about. We want to look, in these few days, we want to look at depression from a psychological, from a biological, from a metaphysical, from a spiritual, and even maybe some planetary concerns. And one of the reasons this is so important is because it's so important. We have here, in the first category, that the number two, let's see, your number two. The World Health Organization sent out a report about a year ago that one of the greatest crises that the world is about to face, and in 15 years from now, it will surpass heart disease, cancer, will be mental illness. Mental illness is on such a rise all over the world. And of course, we surely should understand that if we don't already. As we go farther into Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga is mainly connected with the mode of ignorance. We see in Sattva Yuga, the mode of goodness is very dominant. In Treta Yuga, passion. In Dwarka, a combination of passion and ignorance. And in Kali Yuga, of course, ignorance becomes more and more dominant. Now, one of the reasons that mental illness is on the rise is due to the increase in depression. People are very disturbed with their jobs, sometimes with their husbands, their wives, their children, with their leaders. People are very disturbed with themselves. So one type of depression is, of course, due to certain types of frustrations. We're going to talk about different types. We're going to talk about a type that deals more with spiritual concerns. But before I get into discussing some things, today we're going to, I'll discuss mostly, and the other days we'll try to do some interactive things. I know we're going to find a space, but we'll find some way. Hands up if you didn't get the sheet yet. So first we see this is very important. Not only does it affect us as devotees in so many ways, but it's affecting the world, and it has a certain special types of effects on us, which we will look at in a minute. A few more hands up. But let me just get from 3 or 4 of you what your understanding of depression is. Someone? Yes, in the back. Just stand and speak louder, or you're holding for the paper. From someone can just offer it. There's no right or wrong consideration. Someone just mentioned, can share with us what their particular understanding of depression is. In the back, you like? Yes, just stand, please. You can explain what your understanding of depression is.
Actually, I have my hand up first.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Can you share with us? It's okay. but since, while you're standing, you can share.
Depression is that the feeling I get is not so joy. There's no joy and no happiness.
No happiness, lack of joy, certain personal feeling that he gets. Uh-huh.
Krishna is hand in the situation, being confused, Krishna.
Not being clear in what Krishna is trying to teach us, or is trying to show us, or what Krishna is doing. Yes?
When you move to higher standards, so spiritual standards, and you can't fulfill the demands, then sometimes it leads to this suppression, and this is a complex, and after that you get in trouble and get depression.
Okay. Grief, frustration in trying to attain or come up to a certain standard, feeling some disappointment.
Life didn't turn out the way you thought it would be, and you yourself don't come to the standard you thought you'd be at the time, when you're 14, age 50, age 20, you'd be pure devotee for 2 years.
Life didn't turn out, I think you all heard, the way one anticipated. It did become a pure devotee overnight.
You have no any more dreams or desire for the future, is no horizon. is everything is black, you just take on that and
yes. No hope. Future seems dull, dismal.
Identifying with the past.
Identifying with the past, yes. One or two more?
Negativity.
Negative feeling across the board.
Mm-hmm. Being absorbed in your own mind and not considering others.
Mm-hmm. Being too captured in one's own mind, concerns, problems, issues.
Angriness.
Angry, okay.
Interest
in negative. Okay, no interest. So you can see, general mood, frustration, anxiety, gloom, disturbance of anticipation of things that seem to be not happening, or lack of desire to aspire for anything. We have various understandings of this. Now, we start from one. We'll make it easier for you by giving you the sheet. Later we'll write something. Hopefully you'll be able to notice it on the board. One of the interesting things about depression, it's like the problem of alcohol or drugs, or even sometimes abuse, spouse abuse. It does not just affect the person who is having the mental challenge. That person normally is most affected, but it affects those who are associating closely, intimately with that particular individual. Just like there are therapy groups in different parts of the world for alcoholics or for drug addicts or people addicted to various things. But then there are also groups for helping those who are friends, relatives, parents, children, who have to associate with those who are undergoing such issues. So there's all kind of fallout. It's like some of you probably know or have experienced who perhaps have had or have alcoholic parents, and you see what happens to that particular person, but you also have experienced what happens to yourself and to others who are in association. So in many, many parts of the world, there's like millions and millions of people who are dealing, seeing the whole world through this vagus, through depression. Every day is a difficult experience for them. There's so much fear, so much anxiety, that everything they do is a struggle if they do various things. I mean, there are many people who depression is so intense that they just stay in bed, or they just avoid eating, or so many issues. So we're dealing with the fact that it affects an individual, or affects people, it affects those who the person associates with, and has amazing fallout. Now, interesting.
Yes. Open these two windows.
It's a little warm, I think. Is there a way that these windows can be open? You know the room better than I do. I don't know. Does anybody know just can open up the room? Take some of your sweaters off. When Krishna says, Bahunam Janmanan Mante Janavan Man Prapajante, Prabhupada explains, report, about how rare it is for one coming to devotional service. And he also explains that one of the qualities, one of the attributes that brings a person to devotional service is some basic disgust with material energy. In other words, if we don't have a certain amount of disgust, disdain for what is ordinarily considered normalcy, what people normally do, then this is somewhat a disqualification. Someone who's very excited, very hyped up about leading an ordinary life, that person will not be a good candidate for devotional service. If they're really thinking that they can actually be happy by doing ordinary things as people who are fully conditioned do, then this is a disqualification. We see that Shatu Virha Bhajang Teman, Shatu, we see four types of people come to devotional service. There are those who come out of looking for wealth, those who come out of distress, those who are curious, and those who are seeking knowledge. So there's only one type who's really coming seeking for knowledge. The other types, there's some problems there. And so it may be due to certain frustration because someone is not feeling sufficiently financially endowed. It may be to certain types of frustrations and distress from social, psychological, political, religious concerns. But this is a big category. Someone is curious. And their curiosity may even have to do something with trying to be freed of certain problems. And then there's that category that comes out of knowledge. So, for many, many, many people who come to devotional service, they have come because basically they do not fit in with normal material life. And this has been to their credit. Because of that, they are desperately looking for an alternative. Because of this, they are pretty strong about not wanting just to do orthodox things. So that's good in one sense. But many times, what has brought them into devotional service is certain dysfunctional patterns within themselves or within their environment. And because of some of those dysfunctional things, it's made it easier for them to say yes to Krishna. Now, karmically, Krishna has arranged so that such person can say yes. Because if one is not sufficiently pious, they can have certain issues in their life, and they won't say yes to Krishna. They'll curse the Lord. But there are those who are pious who say yes, but some of them, their coming is really due to issues that would be considered to be rather negative. Now, if such persons are not somehow integrated properly within the devotional community, then even though those things may have brought them into the devotional environment, they'll cause certain destabilization and problems within the devotional community. Those things, let's say someone was abused by the mother, by the father, by the uncle, by the cousin. Somebody had some near-death experience that was very heavy. Somebody had some tremendous sickness. Whatever. Some problems. Somebody who was very introverted. Some things that normally wouldn't be considered so wonderful in material culture. But those things have helped this pious person to say yes to Krishna. So now, if they integrate themselves gradually into transcendental knowledge, then this becomes an asset. But if not, then it's like people coming together who have come out of various intense reasons, come together and they associate, and it is intense. It's one of the reasons why community is a very intense expression. Because literally, we are purifying ourselves in association like a hospital. And so people have come who are sick, but to different degrees, people are taking the medicine. You know, a hospital is one of the worst places to go? Because a hospital is an environment that's just full of disease. You walk into just an atmosphere of all kind of contagious disease, all kind of physical and mental problems, because people have basically come there because they're sick. And so the Krishna Conscious Institution is also, it's a spiritual hospital. People are coming who are sick, but at least we are trying to work on it, whether materialists or not. So the first thing we're looking at is that candidates for devotional service, one of the qualities is a disgust with material nature. And so that in itself means that person has a certain mental focus that is not ordinary. And many times they are saying yes to Krishna due, looking for wealth, distress, some of these issues. And we see that more people come, one in one category comes out of knowledge. And there's also a fine line between what would be considered some mental challenge or mental breakdown, and sometimes some spiritual curiosity, desperation, emergency, or even insight, which later we'll have a chance to talk about. The second category, we have a question here. Who contemplated suicide before joining ISKCON? Many of us, before we came to Krishna consciousness, we were so fried, so distraught, so disturbed with practically everything, to the degree that some people were on their way to commit suicide and they saw a devotee. Some people were planning it and they got a book. This is around the time they were planning it. Some people had tried it and recuperating and got a book. I mean, it is awesome. Sometimes the intensity that one has just before Krishna arranges to make a contact. If we go around the room, if we had time, we ask you how you came to devotional service, we'll find maybe about 75% of people in the room were in a tremendous, tremendous, desperate state where they were just thinking, what is the value of life? What is it? What is everything about? They were crying, they were praying like anything, they were fasting, going through all kinds of changes, but they wanted to know what is truth. And because of the genuineness and the desperation, since Krishna is responding to everyone's desires, the aggregate of our desires. So because we became so desperate that it allowed us to be able to make a higher contact. How many people, how many people before they came to Krishna consciousness, they were feeling extremely desperate. They were questioning everything, wondering what life was about. Just raise your hand. You know, probably 80-90% of the people, if we're honest. See, so about 65-75% of people raised their hand. This is because we did not want to accept what people are normally doing, or we had been there, done that, and can consider there must be something more. How many people in the room were even contemplating suicide before joining? Raise your hand. Usually I get about 1/3. Here you have about 1/4 because some of you are timid. But just what you saw is quite awesome. About 1/4 of the people in the room. Very interesting. Which helps us to realize that, you know, coming to Krishna consciousness is a very intense experience that we were having. And Krishna made an arrangement based on our desire to know. If we look at number 3. Psychosomatic disease. So just keep that in mind. That when we come into the process, 4 types of people come. Most people do not come only out of knowledge. And even sometimes those who come out of knowledge come with the most frustration. Because to a certain extent, material knowledge brings pain. The more that you know materially without having an understanding of transcendence, the more you begin to realize that something is wrong. Some of the most intelligent people, supposedly in the world by whatever material intelligence is, are often philosophers. And some of the most intelligent of the philosophers are what is called existential philosophers, who often have a ideology that everything is absurd. It's absurd to live, it's absurd to die, it's absurd to make wealth, it's absurd to be poor. Everything is absurd. Because materially speaking, everything is absurd. That you work hard, you do, you struggle in so many ways, and you live to, you know, according to what part of the world you're in. Some places the average lifespan is only 45 years of age. Some places the average lifespan is 50, 60, 70. I think here it may be in the 70s. But it's still absurd that you live only for 70-some years if you live an average lifespan and then you die. And all that you've done, and sometimes if you're very successful, it's even worse. Because before the body's put into casket or cremated, the family members are already fighting over the estate. So all that you acquired now, it just brought so much anxiety to your family members that they're trying to grab it, and sometimes litigation goes on for the rest of their life, or family members become ardent enemies of each other. So it is absurd in one sense. The more you know, the more maturely, the more you begin to realize that something is wrong. Something is quite not happening. Something is not quite wonderful. So, whatever the case is, we see that there's a chance that one will have to deal with some mental confrontations. Psychosomatic disease, number 3. The mind is so powerful. We understand from Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be our greatest friend. It can be our greatest enemy. So the mind has its ability to control the body. For some people, it's so intense that just from their mental reflections, their body gets paralyzed. There are certain types of diseases that are directly due to people's psychological state. There's what is called psychoneural immunology, which simply means how the mind affects every aspect of the physical body. Affects the immune system, affects the degree of recovery, etc. So the mind is so powerful that it's like another entity that's just trying to harass you. We see how Raghunath Das Goswami, some of the Goswamis, how in their songs and their prayers, they are addressing the mind like it's a foreign entity. Because the mind basically is our greatest enemy. It is really just getting some demands from the senses, The senses have some desire for some connection. And they send a command to the mind, and then the mind is not connected with transcendental knowledge. The mind becomes a slave to try to fulfill what the senses want. The eyes, the nose, the tongue, the belly, genitals, all trying to experience, and they say, mind, do something. And then the mind works to try to fulfill. So, many people, the mind is so strong that they can't control what the senses are requesting. We all have experiences. We hear these little voices sometimes, huh? Sometimes the mind gets so crazy. You are walking across a bridge. It's like somebody whispering, jump, jump. You're walking down the steps, and there's a little old lady in front, and the mind says, push her, kick her. Some people, they don't have the ability to check that. You're walking by, and there's this wonderful store with it's all glass, and the mind says, throw a brick through the window. Some people, you know, when they hear that, they can't check it. We all hear this kind of noise from time to time. Hopefully we don't act upon it. But some people do. Because we understand that until we're able to separate ourselves from the body, the physical as well as the subtle, then there's every chance that we will give in and we will respond to it. In the medicine, they have what's called the placebo effect. Any of you know what that is a little bit? Placebo effect? Yes. So every medicine is tested by this also. For instance, when a new medicine comes out, they test the medicine on a few subjects, and then they'll just have a pill that's just a sugar pill or it's just candy or whatever, and they also give it to a certain number of subjects just to get an idea of if this thing really works or to what degree it works. Now, one thing they keep finding out is that often they give people the sugar candy and it works. So for years and years, they were trying to figure, what's happening? We just gave the person some sugar candy and it worked. So they try to look at that quotient in contrast to what the pill, what an actual medicine can do. But not so long ago, they found out that one of the reasons that the sugar pill or the candy works is that it has a lot to do with what people are thinking is happening. Someone is given sugar candy and they're told that this will help your malaria, help your cholera, it'll help your heart disease or whatever. And then the person's heart gets better, the malaria goes, the cholera goes. And all they got was a sugar pill. Well, what they began to find out is that as you are thinking something, that sends messages through your body. It affects your hormones or endorphins. And so just feeling good, just thinking something is going to help you, the body has its way of producing its own medicine. And so it's not just the pill or not the pill, what the pill really is, but also in just thinking that way, the body has its way of working and building up itself. It releases certain chemicals in the body that are healing chemicals. Now, you see, we took the opposite of this. If the mind is not feeling satisfied, if the mind is disturbed, if the mind is experiencing stress, if the mind is fearful, then the same mind sends chemicals, negative chemicals, in the body, and it causes a problem. Some time back, I was speaking at the yearly National American Medical Association in America. I think you probably have here also, I'm sure. Once a year, the doctors, they come together and they have their conference. So I was doing things. I was speaking in the family practice session, but I was also speaking on the power of the mind on the body. And so I was addressing particularly the element of love. I think some of you maybe have read some of my books. I write about all these social, psychological, sort of spiritual things. Any of you have read some of my books? Okay. Okay, so you are not find me so foreign then. So I'm sort of eclectic in one sense. So I was at the American Medical Association, and I was speaking particularly about the potency of love. How love really heals, and how lack of love kills. It's been scientifically proven that when people feel alienated, or when they do not feel love, and I talk a lot about this when I do workshops and things on community building, that they're 4 to 5 times more susceptible to premature death. And about 5 times more susceptible to every type of disease. Now think about that. Someone who is feeling good about something, their mind releases chemicals that act in healing the body. Someone who is not feeling good, someone who is feeling sad, depressed, alienated, not cared for, not appreciated, not valued, they are about five times more susceptible to almost every type of disease, 4 to 5 times more susceptible to premature death. So we'd say roughly about 4 or 5 in both cases. To premature death, that means they'll die earlier. And it also means that any kind of disease, they're more susceptible to it. I was just talking with Rabbi Soup before I came over, and I was mentioning, now we're dealing with so many more issues in our movement of all different calibers. And so I was saying that as leaders, we have to be very careful about the stress factor. Because as one is experiencing so much stress, stress either engenders or it amplifies any type of problem. Any type of physical problem you may have or mental, that stress factor will amplify it. If something may be dormant, stress will bring it out. You may have it in a minute case, but then it'll become chronic. One has to be very careful. This is how powerful that the mind is. So when the mind is not feeling good, adrenaline, or when you're fearful, or when you're not feeling loved, what's called the hypothalamus, the neurotransmitters, I don't know if it sounds too technical, but what happens is that throughout the body, then the cells are like attacked by the mind being depressed. So if the mind is too disturbed or depressed, then it's like our minds act as like enemies in attacking various organs in our bodies. Many people who come down with chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, whatever, it's after a death, a divorce, after some great disappointment, because the mind literally they starts attacking the cells, and then the cells become diseased. So these things shouldn't be so surprising us. We know from Bhagavad Gita how wretched the mind can be. And as devotees, as we're constantly trying to control our minds, we see that even though we've been chanting and doing so many things for so many years, sometimes the mind just flips. And of course our duty is to bring it back. So this is how important it is too for us to have loving Vaishnava relationships. That is, it saves our doctor bill, it helps us be more productive, it helps us to be able to access our devotion better, because we know when the body gets sick, it becomes hard to be able to try to do service or to think of Krishna. Now, number four, there's various types of depressions. There's one type called unipolar depression to bipolar. You don't have to understand all these terms technical, but this is the basic essence of what we're discussing. This will help you and will help others in the present, especially in the future, that we're going to be confronted with this like anything. As a matter of fact, it's a little metaphysical, but some of you have noticed that since the turn of this millennium, that you've found that your mind is giving you more trouble. And many of you are finding that than ever before in your devotional life. I travel so much, and I'm finding devotees are saying this. And there's a reason for it, because there's a lot of more subtler influences. And so what happens is that the mind sometimes even gets occupied by, you know, anytime you walk into an environment, you're picking up on the energy of that environment. Thoughts are like electricity. And so also people are carrying their ideas, they're carrying their desires, their anxieties, their fears, their lust, their greed, enviousness. It's all within the subtle body. And so as more and more people are fried, burnt out, disappointed, drugged up, etc., then as we move about, we're literally getting drained and bombarded by such people and by such environments. And as the earth planet itself is a living entity, Mother Bhumi, everything is alive. The earth is alive. It's one living entity. The moon is one living entity. The universe is a living entity. The galaxy. So every living entity has ways how it is to be treated, to be able to maximize its ability to do the natural thing. And every living organism, if you do not treat it or honor it properly, there is trouble. So there's been so much abuse to Mother Bhumi, huh? We're rupturing the womb of Mother Bhumi by drilling the oil wells and by toxic waste, by all kind of issues. And so we see an increase in earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, famines, all over. So this then is a body. And if a body is constantly abused, the body tries to find ways to cleanse itself, to replenish itself, just like sometimes when we have germs have intruded into our body. In some ways, the way the body tries to deal with it, you get fever, you get diarrhea, vomit,
So it's a way of sending a signal that there is foreign intrusion, and now the body is trying to work on the intrusion. So the earth planet itself is being intruded upon, and because we are occupying the space on the earth, and we also have physical bodies, that we are more and more likely to be susceptible to all kind of influences. And so where devotees are not being very focused in their devotion, where they're not being project-oriented, or they're not going more internally, then there'll be so much emptiness in the mind, so much lack of fulfillment, so much lack of direction, and what will happen is that one will become more susceptible to intrusions. In a day or two from now, I'm going to talk about some things about inattentive chanting, as we talk about different states that the mind experiences, different altered states. And there's a certain states that, there's things that are good at each state, there are things that are also negative, and there are things that align themselves with various states of consciousness. And something happens when we have unattentive chanting that is very dangerous. So what I'm saying, in essence, and I'll talk about it more, is that as devotees, we are in a very glorious position, but also very dangerous. When you take to spiritual life, you're no longer the same, especially if you initiate, you're no longer the same. You're marked. You are marked by the parampara, but you're also marked by the demons. The demons know where the bhakti is. They know the devotees. It's like sometimes some of you go in Sankirtan or you're at shopping or you're doing something. You're not even in devotional garb. But sometimes you meet someone who's pious and they just have a liking to you because they're picking up that there's something special about you. But sometimes people just get disturbed just by your presence. Because if they are too sinful and you are carrying devotion, your presence just imposes upon them and makes them feel angry. And they say something harsh, they're rude, they curse at you, whatever. So demons, the big demons especially, they know where the devotion is. So the danger is when we take the devotional service, and if we're not acting properly, devotionally, then it's like a soldier going out in the battlefield with their uniform on or without their weaponry. Does the enemy say, go back and get your weapons? So the enemy says, you're an easy prey. Because you are not protected, you do not have your weapons, and one becomes a casualty. So as we build up, you'll begin to see why sometimes devotees are becoming casualties in various ways, or even sometimes having more problems than they did when they came into the devotional environment. So this unipolar depression is a type of depression where it is just this sort of emptiness constantly. And it's a different degree. Some people have it so bad that they are unfunctional. They do not bathe, they do not eat, etc. Others have it where they try to hide it, but it just surfaces from time to time. They have this gradual gloomy mood, or they dive into frustration easier than most people, but it's there. But the bipolar, manic depression, is more difficult because this is highs and this is lows. There's some people who have it, the manic, where they're just super active. They're into all kind of grandiose things. They're thinking that they're Lord Chaitanya, they're thinking that they're Krishna, thinking they're Jesus Christ, thinking that they're Napoleon, or whatever. Or they don't sleep sometimes for days. And then the other is the low. So some people, they have high sometimes, they have low, they have high. Now, there are people who enter into our society who sometimes have this manic tendency, not so much the depressive side, but they have this kind of energy of wanting to control people in an unhealthy way. And so they may find attractive a kind of autocratic society where authority figures really have a lot of sort of leeway. Just like you have sometimes people who are pedophiles who come into schools, nursery schools, places where children are, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, or clubs, because they know they have the chance for that. So sometimes we have people who have a kind of a manic set of type personality, and they can do a lot of powerful things, a lot of wonderful things, but they have sort of a mental challenge, and that there's a heavy autocraticness that they just have to control people. So they want to be in situations where that is there. We also have people who have an over dependence, who just want to be told how to brush their teeth, tie their shoestrings, wash their clothes, this and that. People who practically can't function unless they're told almost every single detail. Our society also draws people like that, who in a material society would have trouble doing things because they have this kind of heavy codependency that they're drawn to such an environment. That's not necessarily bad. It's bad if it stays only at that level. But because they're pious, they come to Krishna, and they have a chance to get purified by that. But these are some patterns, you know. We have other people who are schizophrenic or who are heavily, heavily mentally disturbed, and almost every temple, every now and then, you get somebody who comes like that who may even join. Sometimes they are coming because their minds are disturbed, but inwardly they're crying out. And inwardly the superstore is letting them know or getting them to feel that there is some shelter, there's some relief, there is some knowledge, some aid. So people will come like that sometimes. And as much as possible, if there are ways we can help them, of course, we should. So number three is alcoholic influence and heredity. That just as people can come from alcoholic parents and they have the gene, the parents have it because they got it from their parents, grandparents have it. So some of us, we may have certain genes, because again, keep in mind, the body is a machine. Some of us are carrying certain genes that will be more prone, make us more prone for alcohol or drugs or for certain types of mental disturbances. It doesn't mean one cannot rise above that. Just like we all come into devotional service with something. We have different types of credits, different types of debits. Excuse me. So for some people, they come into devotional life, they just move so fast, everything is so easy to them. Well, they paid some heavy dues in the past, their last devotion was of a high level, and so in this lifetime, they're taking off where they left off. Take the converse of that, some people have a great, great difficulties because the quality wasn't so good. In this life, they're trying to do their devotion, but it's like they're weighted down. So also, this says the mind often is affected due to the genes, heredity, and environmental influences we know are always there. One can obviously become Krishna conscious, but it may be a little more difficult if they're coming due to mental challenges due to some genetic factor. So with alcohol, with drugs, with some mental ailment, then often one is more prone to experience that. So some of you who may be having that kind of difficulty, especially if you the man, look at your mother. If your mother has had the gene, you're more likely to be a carrier. And for a girl, if your father has alcoholic problems or mental ill problems, mental incoherences, then it's more likely that you may be haunted by that. To the degree that we take to the spiritual process, then all of these things, of course, can gradually be less of a disturbance on us. But, in fact, they will have some effect. I'm going to jump over Dark Night of the Soul. Tomorrow I'm giving Bhagavatam class, and I was asked either to choose a verse or to speak on something related to the course. So we're only going to have a few days, I think 4 or 5 days. I'm going to do my Bhagavatam class and give certain verses from the Bhagavatam and Gita or so, and talk about certain things, about a certain type of depression that really has a lot to do with spiritual unfoldment. So we'll skip over that. Number five, neurosis versus psychosis or psychotic. See, there is a certain type of mental disturbance that you can be freed of through what's called talk therapy, through different types of processing through therapists that you can be assisted. But just as there's about 150 different types of causes for mental illness, some types are due to allergies, some types is due to sugar diabetes or to blood level, some mental illnesses is due to tumor. I mean, there's just so many things there.